Blog Talk Radio.
Cowards try to change our lives, change the things they despise in America. But heroes, fueled by freedom, that unalienable right to be, came to rescue the injured, rescue the innocent, rescue these truths we hold to be. Self-evident.
By their creator, they went down into that crater, in that fiery hell, they sacrificed their lives. Steel and stone, sweat and heartache, now it stands once again for freedom. So call it freedom, call it freedom.
And a very pleasant Sunday afternoon to you, and it is a very pleasant Sunday afternoon here in Ohio. Jason Hawes here on Sunday, September 4th, still Labor Day weekend here on American Faith Today. Hope you're all doing well. Hopefully you're all enjoying your weekend, and hopefully you're enjoying some nice weather, as we have been for the past 4 days or so here, that unfortunately locally is going to turn not so nice. I don't know what the humidity is going to be, but it is going to be getting a little bit more unpleasant and a little more hot on the from the pure temperature side of things, starting tomorrow, actually, on Labor Day, when it's supposed to be around 87 degrees here and 91 on Wednesday. So, and here I was looking very forward to fall, which is, and I know we're not in fall yet. So I know, don't jump ahead of the game, Jason. Don't get ahead of yourself. No matter how much you want fall to get here, and no matter how much you're anxious for it to arrive, it will arrive when it arrives, and not any time before then, not any time, hopefully not any time after then. But we're going to have to sweat out, it looks like, here locally anyway, another hot, maybe sticky week, at least another hot week, before we actually have what looks like another fairly mild weekend next weekend. But regardless, hopefully you're all doing quite well and enjoying, if you have an extended weekend, as I actually do, because of tomorrow's holiday, hopefully you'll make great use of it, whether it's simply relaxing or doing something with family or doing needed things around the house. Hopefully, like I said, it goes well for you. I wanted to talk today. I wanted to do a show today, and the call-in number is 347-989-8387. If you're listening live and if you want to call in, and the chat room is open as well. As mentioned yesterday, I kind of wanted to do a two-part series, a two-part show today, and I'm still kind of planning on doing a show maybe of a different type tomorrow. I may get back into a Bible-based show. That's where I'm leaning anyway, but we'll see. But I wanted to take a day yesterday to talk about the dangers of Huma Abedin, who, again, could conceivably be our next White House chief of staff if Hillary Clinton becomes president. And I wanted to take a day today to kind of tie in Steve Bannon and the alt-right, and I really want to finish on, and hopefully I don't screw things up royally and not give myself enough time to cover this adequately, but I really want to finish on this connection between the Donald Trump movement and the Brexit movement, which I agreed with Brexit, but there's a connection there that I'm assuming most, if not all of you, don't realize. That, again, with Steve Bannon very heavily involved, kind of front and center in the whole thing, But, you know, I want to start, who is, I kind of want to roughly start with who is Steve Bannon, and it's a difficult question, in a sense, to try to answer, because, for one thing, I don't have, and I wish I did, but I don't have the luxury or the time or the capability to research hours upon end, days upon end, Steve Bannon or anything like that. You know, obviously I don't have a crack research staff. It's just me. So I'm not going to sit here and say that I've studied Steve Bannon for a long period of time, because I haven't. But I have done a little bit of research into him, and I'll be sharing bits and pieces of that with you today. Steve Bannon, of course, was, and may again when it's all said and done, I don't think he resigned his position. I think he temporarily stepped away from his position as the chair of Breitbart.com to, of course, become now the CEO of Donald Trump's campaign. Bannon, I've mentioned in the write-up, in some ways could be considered Donald Trump, and in some ways they're not the same. They are the same, I think, and as Ben Shapiro mentioned, and I'll have a piece here from Ben Shapiro that I'll be getting to. They are, I believe, both kind of bully-type individuals. They are seemingly both obsessed with needing to be regarded as winners, which competitiveness is not in and of itself a bad thing, but, I mean, we're talking about an obsession with needing to be regarded as winners. I don't know if I could say that's where the similarities end. Personality-wise, though, they are kind of, I think, from what I can tell, one and the same. Now, ideology-wise and belief system-wise, that's where it gets a little more difficult. Donald Trump, if we can say that he has any political center, political core, ideological foundation or grounding, I personally believe he certainly at least leans, maybe even heavily leans, on the leftist liberal side of things in terms of where he honestly sits, where he honestly stands, not how he wishes to present himself right now as he's running for president. But I think there's also an argument that could be made that he really doesn't have any or very many set political positions, that he's really just kind of running this way, running that way, leaning this way, leaning that way, maybe a true populist in the sense, but not really grounded in anything. Bannon, you know, you can call him a conservative in a sense, but I don't know if that really fits either. Bannon seems to be a guy who is simply obsessed again and set on destroying whomever and whatever he regards as the opposition, which, by the way, is kind of encapsulates, in my opinion, the Donald Trump supporter. And I'm talking about the Donald Trump supporter who has been there from day one. You're talking about people who are basically angry, and there is a reason to be angry at the way at the direction the country has gone in, at the direction our government has gone, at the people that we have elected to represent us, so-called represent us in our government. There's a reason to be angry, but anger is, in many cases, what seems to drive these people. And it's in my opinion, I can't stipulate enough. This is my opinion only. But it's a short-sightedness as well. You know, this desire that we have to change everything just for the sake of change. And Bannon, again, a very destructive force. There was an email exchange. I don't have it here in front of me, but there was an email exchange that I did look at yesterday. I think it was at the Daily Beast. And believe me, I'm not trying to spend a lot of time at the Daily Beast. It was just simple internet searches. But somebody had uncovered this email exchange between Steve Bannon and, I believe, Breitbart, Washington, D.C. editor Matthew Boyle, in which they were talking about what are we to do with the Republican Party, and specifically the leadership of the party, right now. I believe this was a couple years ago in 2014. And you had these emails back and forth between Bannon and Boyle. Boyle was a little bit more measured, a little bit more rational. Bannon was just like, and one of his favorite words, insult, seems to be to call people cunts. He said the Republican leadership is a bunch of cunts. We need to burn this down. I mean, that's kind of where he sits, just burn the whole thing down. Boyle said, kind of talked him a little bit off the ledge from these emails, saying, well, we can't be seen as doing this. We have to leave it in the hands of the grassroots, the conservatives in the base, and the Tea Party and what have you, which Bannon seemed to agree with. But again, this whole idea that Donald Trump is going to be this wrecking ball. Now, the short-sightedness is a lot of people have said, well, the politicians have betrayed us, the politicians have lied, therefore all politicians are liars and betrayers. There is some truth in that, but at the same time, there's this overgeneralization and this notion that therefore, this flawed notion, in my opinion, that therefore we need to elect somebody, nominate somebody who's not, quote, a politician. Well, you know, politicians are liars. But businessmen, which Donald Trump is, are also liars. Salesmen are liars. Police officers are liars. Lawyers are liars. Judges are liars. Unfortunately, pastors are liars. There are liars in every walk of life, which is why it is so very vital that you examine the person. And not just what, you know, what do they do for a living? No, you examine the person. And when you've got individuals out there with very large shows and with very large reach, like Sean Hannity, who seems to go on the air, and I don't listen to him every day, but I listen to him occasionally still, and I read about him going on the air seemingly daily and talking about how it's the fault of the never-Trumpers if Hillary wins, and holding this person accountable and that person accountable and naming names. And, you know, it's a simple, logical thing that if you have, let's say, someone who makes a mess, let's use kindergarten logic. I don't mean to be insulting, but let's use kindergarten logic. And let's say little Johnny made a mess. Whether he meant to make the mess or not, little Johnny made a mess on the floor. Maybe he decided to finger paint the walls in his kindergarten classroom. Little Timmy comes along and sees that little Johnny has done this. And the teacher has both of them in front of him. And the teacher knows that little Johnny had made the mess, and the teacher knows that little Timmy was merely a witness to the mess. Now, who deserves the blame, the person who made the mess or the person who was a witness to the mess? Well, in this case, to extend upon that or extrapolate from that, you had people such as myself saying that they could not see themselves in all good conscience supporting Donald Trump, whether it was because he wasn't a true conservative, whether it was because of his past liberalism, whether it was because of his flip-flopping, his inconsistencies, his incoherence, his being completely in over his head on policy, or whether it was his own abrasive personality that said, look, don't nominate this guy. If you nominate this guy, don't expect us to support him. And there were people who tried to lovingly, there were people who tried to maybe not so lovingly, make the argument, and then, you know, people, again, out of anger, out of a desire to see change for change's sake, out of a desire to burn it down, to simply burn it down, supported him, and now it's supposed to be the fault of people such as myself and others out there who, in good conscience, can't support Donald Trump, that Hillary Clinton might be elected, rather than the people who made the mess and were warned about making the mess to begin with, that if you nominate this guy, it's going to be an uphill battle because America doesn't really like him. And yet, again, somehow it's our fault. But back to Bannon. There's a piece here from The Atlantic. And I, for time's sake, I'll probably just try to skim or go as quickly as I can because I do want to get to this thing from Heat Street. Maybe try to hit that about 5 o'clock or a little bit after. But anyway, from The Atlantic, the radical anti-conservatism of Stephen Bannon. Donald Trump's campaign manager wants to destroy the left. and the GOP nominee is just the most recent vessel of convenience in his consequences be damned crusade. Now, again, it talks about Bannon. He kind of got his start as a filmmaker. He made a film in 2010 featuring Sarah Palin, Michelle Bachmann, and Ann Coulter. He was quoted as saying, "These women cut to the heart of the progressive narrative. That's one of the unintended consequences of the women's liberation movement, that in fact, the women that would lead this country would be feminine, they would be pro-family, they would have husbands, they would love their children, they wouldn't be a bunch of dykes that came from the Seven Sisters school." And again, he went on, he made different films, he made a biopic on Sarah Palin, and again, as it says here in the Atlantic, his big thing is anti-leftism, which is a commonality, which is a shared mission in that sense. They said that's where his venom and animus most surfaces, whether expressed by lashing out at a bunch of dykes from Northeastern colleges or union organizers or Barack Obama or those who don't fight leftists as Bannon believes they should. Bannon is so dominated by a desire to wage war and vanquish his enemy that he cannot think clearly about damage wrought by his destructive, polarizing approach or the long-term consequences. And there is a danger here. There is a danger in simply saying burn it down and simply saying destroy everything and simply saying be a wrecking ball. In the first place, why do people think that Donald Trump, who has been a lifelong supporter of the establishment, who has been a recent supporter of every big government bailout, stimulus, the bank bailouts, the Wall Street bailouts, the automotive industry bailouts, Obama's 2009 stimulus, a man who wants to at least double the amount of spending, which would be $500 billion plus on infrastructure, but to double the amount of spending on infrastructure that Hillary Clinton has proposed. But this is a guy who's cozied up to the establishment his entire life, who has never, to my knowledge, has never by action, by deed, not by word, but by action, by deed, done anything to fight big government, to fight the establishment. Indeed, in 2014, when you had Matt Bevin challenging Mitch McConnell, it was Donald Trump who tweeted out, "Why would the people of Kentucky won a new senator when they have Mitch McConnell," who Trump said would possibly be the Speaker of the Senate, obviously a misspeak or a mistweet on Donald Trump's part as far as Speaker of the Senate, but he sided with the establishment guy. He sided with the establishment guy in funding John Boehner in 2014 again, as well, against more Tea Party conservative-type candidates. This is a guy who has been a friend to the establishment his entire life, decides he's going to run for president and paints himself as this anti-establishment reformer when he has never remotely been that. But anyway, this idea of burn it down, wreck it, well, you know what? You need to have a plan on the backside. You need to have a plan to rebuild. You need to have a coherent philosophy to rebuild. And what I never, ever hear from these burn it down people is, first of all, how are you going to rebuild? And I never, ever hear them mentioning, or rarely hear them mentioning, rebuilding by getting back to godly principles, by getting back to a reverence, a respect, and an obedience to God, as well as getting back to the Constitution of this country. It's merely just burn it down, kick the bums out, and then we don't really know what we're going to do after that. But anyway, this piece from The Atlantic, again, it mentions, of course, that oddly enough, Steve Bannon, as you may know, was a Goldman Sachs banker in the past. So it's perfectly fine for Donald Trump to hire a former Goldman Sachs banker as the CEO of his campaign. But yet a guy like Ted Cruz is the devil for having a wife who currently works for Goldman Sachs. But again, the whole thing here, and I will just kind of try to hit on the high points for time's sake. Bannon in 2013 made a speech. It doesn't really say where he made the speech, but he said, We don't believe there is a functional conservative party in this country, and we certainly don't think the Republican Party is that. It's going to be an insurgent, center-right, populist movement that is virulently anti-establishment, and it's going to continue to hammer this city, both the progressive left and the institutional Republican Party. Now, the piece here at The Atlantic mentions that Bannon was quite critical of President Obama for basically allowing Vladimir Putin to do whatever he wanted to do in the Ukraine, and yet here we have Bannon turning Breitbart.com into, as The Atlantic says, the propaganda arm, as Ben Shapiro said, as Donald Trump's personal Pravda, and yet you have Trump that's spoken admirably of Putin, suggested he might do nothing if Putin sees neighboring territory, cast doubts on America's commitment to NATO, demonstrated utter ignorance of events in the Ukraine, and as if that wasn't enough, employed a campaign manager, Paul Manafort, who was tangled up in a corruption inquiry and designated to receive millions in secret cash payments from the party of a pro-Russian leader in Ukraine he had helped to elect. And again, I've even saw an article today or recently this weekend where it said that Paul Manafort may have played a role in Putin's annexation of Crimea as well. But there's also an argument to be made, perhaps, that Steve Bannon himself is not so much anti-Putin, anti-Russia, as he perhaps wants to portray, and that will be coming up in the Heat Street piece. Now, Ben Shapiro, of course, worked alongside Steve Bannon. He wrote a piece after Bannon became the CEO of Trump's campaign saying, I know Trump's new campaign chairman, Steve Bannon. Here's what you need to know. First of all, that he turned Breitbart into Trump Pravda for his own personal gain. Shapiro recalls that Bannon helped Trump smear one of his own employees and one of his own reporters in Michelle Fields by essentially calling her a liar and, by the way, a cunt as well, for saying that she had been grabbed by Corey Lewandowski. Shapiro wrote, Andrew built his life and his career on one mission, fight the bullies, but Andrew's life mission has been betrayed. Indeed, Breitbart News, under the chairmanship of Steve Bannon, has put a stake through the heart of Andrew's legacy. In my opinion, Steve Bannon is a bully and has sold out Andrew's mission in order to back another bully, Donald Trump. He has shaped the company into Trump's personal Pravda. The facts are undeniable. Breitbart News has become precisely the reverse of what Andrew would have wanted. Steve Bannon and those who follow his lead should be ashamed of themselves. He also mentions that Bannon uses celebrity conservatives to elevate his personal profile. He latched on to Michelle Bachmann. He latched on to Sarah Palin. He befriended Sean Hannity, appeared on his show regularly. He met Andrew Breitbart. And he then wound up getting his position as chair of Breitbart.com, which he then, according to Shapiro, turned into his personal domain, making himself a regularly bylined columnist, certainly rare, Shapiro adds, for a major media company, and installing himself as a radio host on Breitbart Radio on Sirius XM. Finally, he used his role as Breitbart CEO to turn the outlet into Trump Pravda, creating a stepping stone to close connection with Trump. Breitbart publicly burned bridges with everyone to maintain its Trump loyalty. He goes on to say that was Bannon, a scorched earth personal opportunist. He says Bannon took at least one major Breitbart investor for a serious ride, that being Robert Mercer, who had put millions of dollars. He was a Breitbart News investor. He supported Ted Cruz, even as Bannon manipulated Breitbart News into a Cruz-bashing Trump propaganda outlet. The spokesperson for the Mercer family was, Kellyanne Conway, who has now been installed as Trump's campaign manager. Shapiro says, I've been reliably informed by sources associated with the pro-Cruz super PAC that for months, as Bannon was using Breitbart News to promote Trump, the Mercers were defending Bannon's neutrality to the other Cruz supporters worried about Breitbart's dishonest coverage about Ted Cruz. Breitbart staff, Shapiro mentioned, lust after Trump involvement. You had Joel Pollack, the Breitbart lawyer, who desperately wanted to be a Trump speechwriter. You had Matthew Boyle, the pseudo-journalist who reportedly bragged about becoming Trump's press secretary, although he said that was trash talk or just kidding, and Milo Yiannopoulos, the Trump-worshipping alt-right drug stooge. He says they're all in with their God King now. He also mentions that Breitbart openly embraced the white supremacist alt-right under Bannon's leadership. He said Andrew Breitbart despised racism, truly despised it. He used to brag regularly about helping to integrate his fraternity at Tulane. He insisted that racial stories be treated with special care to avoid even the whiff of racism. With Bannon embracing Trump, all that changed. Now Breitbart has become the alt-right go-to website with Yiannopoulos pushing white ethno-nationalism as a legitimate response to political correctness and the comment section turning into a cesspool for white supremacist meme makers. He also adds that this is the sort of corrupt media relationship Breitbart used to abhor, and that Trump's campaign strategy, which other people have mentioned, could be the launch of a new media outlet because he's got Steve Bannon of Breitbart, he's got Roger Ailes, formerly of Fox News, he's got Sean Hannity, who's a little lapdog for him, and he says, finally, Bannon is a legitimately sinister figure. Many former employees of Breitbart News are afraid of Steve Bannon. He is a vindictive, nasty figure, infamous for verbally abusing supposed friends and threatening enemies. Bannon is a smarter version of Trump. He's an aggressive self-promoter who name drops to heighten his profile and woo bigger names, and then uses those bigger names as stepping stools to his next destination. Trump may be his final destination, or it may not. He will attempt to ruin anyone who impedes his unending ambition, and he will use anyone bigger than he is, for example, Donald Trump, to get where he wants to go. Bannon knows that in the Game of Thrones, you win or die, and he certainly doesn't intend to die. He'll kill everyone else before he goes. Now, that's what Shapiro said about Steve Bannon. Dana Loesch has called him one of the worst people on God's green earth, and I don't know entirely what Dana Loesch is talking about, but I suspect, as it was made reference to in a piece at Politico, that when Dana Loesch tried to leave Breitbart, that Bannon did something to her that he's done to other people who have left. He tried to make it absolutely impossible for her to get another job by using defamatory remarks, by trying to ruin her reputation, and even by threatening to sue anyone who would perhaps hire Dana Loesch, and it's been other people besides Dana Loesch. It was remarked that to get out of Breitbart and to get out from working for and with Steve Bannon, you almost had to make it so that they wanted to fire you, that it was their idea for you to go. That way, Steve Bannon could be regarded as a winner rather than a loser in the thing, exactly, again, like Donald Trump. Now, I want to touch briefly, ever so briefly, again, on the alt-right. And, you know, there's a lot of people that are saying that the alt-right, that it's a fictitious thing, that it's just smears against Trump. Well, there are some very troubling aspects of the alt-right. And apparently there's, I don't know if there's really any solidarity within it. There's people with different degrees of philosophies, what have you. But there's some troubling stuff here. This from pathos.com, which I believe is a Catholic website. Steve Bannon, Trump's fascination with the alt-right. Trump recently hired Steve Bannon to direct his campaign when Paul Manafort flamed out amid accusations he had unhealthy ties to foreign influence. Steve Bannon does have decided interest in the area of, again, the alt-right, since he is a major champion of what has come to be known as the alt-right, also known as the Dark Enlightenment. That means that the alt-right, not pro-life people, are running the Trump campaign. And who are these people, the author asks? Well, let's let the alt-right speak for itself in a recent piece by Elmer Fisher called The Pro-Life Temptation. And this person writes, few issues divide our movement, whether we call it identitarianism, race realism, or the alt-right like abortion. To some, the practice is akin to murder, and its acceptance shows the degeneracy of the left. To others, abortion and contraception more generally are eugenic practices which are about the only things keeping our societies from falling into complete idiocracy. And as a matter of fact, from the sound of it, there's people almost like a Margaret Sanger type of attitude and philosophy here within the alt-right. This person says, I understand the pro-life temptation. The kinds of people who support abortion access most fervently are those who stand for the things we oppose: selfishness, atomization, the liberation of women, and leftist identity politics. In popular culture, legalized abortion is tied to reproductive freedom, which has liberated women from the horrible fate of being wives and mothers and allowed them to pursue more meaningful lives as cubicle drones. Conversely, it is tempting to believe that abolishing legalized abortion will lead to a return to more traditional values, a higher birth rate, and healthier relations between the sexes. Many European leaders that we admire are moving their countries in a pro-life direction, perhaps because they have bought into this narrative. Unfortunately, as our movement gains influence, it is important that we not fall prey to the pro-life temptation. And they go on to mention, again, why they are not pro-life. And again, I'll post this on the American Faith Today Facebook page. Like I said, I want to leave time here for the Heat Street piece. And this as well, though, from the Daily Stormer, which obviously is a white nationalist, kind of like Stormfront, a white nationalist alt-right website and community. On August 23rd, 2016, a blogger here said, Jewess, Sarah Posner, Trump's Stephen Bannon created online haven for white nationalists. And again, this was a piece from her, I believe, at Mother Jones, how Donald Trump's new campaign chief created an online haven for white nationalists. And again, but the whole point of this article is that they are just absolutely, again, ripping into the Jews. And I would say, again, for those who are deep Bible study students, understand that there are many people today who call themselves and who identify as Jews who are not Jews by origin or by nationality or by birth or what have you. Again, I would refer you to actually much of the Bible, but certainly Revelation 2 and Revelation chapter 3, Christ speaking to the churches of Philadelphia and the church of Smyrna, saying that you're able to recognize and you understand that there are these people who call themselves Jews that are not Jews, but do lie and are of the synagogue of Satan. But anyway, again, it's very much what people today would call anti-Semitic. This particular blogger or author is almost going out of the way to say, yes, indeed, we are white racist. We are white nationalist. And you know, it's a scary thing in the sense that it's almost harkening back to kind of, and of course we have neo-Nazis today, which these people would perhaps fit very neatly into, but it is almost harkening back to the Hitler era, to the Nazi era, in which, you know, we need a master race in terms of the white race, and in which we're going to blame the Jews for all of our problem, those dirty Jews, which again, I'll say simply are not necessarily even Jews to start with, just as it wasn't Jews who crucified or who called for the crucifixion of Jesus Christ, but merely people who lived amongst the Jews in the land of Judea. Okay, I've got about 10, 12 minutes here. I want to, like I said, the main point of this was the Heat Street piece. Now, this from Louise Mensch, who I believe is the founder of Heat Street. She was also in the UK, in the British Parliament for a time. And the piece is titled, Stephen Bannon is the link between Donald Trump and Nigel Farage. And this is actually quite informative. Unsuccessful Nigel Farage has very little to do with Brexit, but Americans don't know this. Farage fought and lost a bitter battle to run the Vote Leave side of the Brexit campaign. Sidelined, he produced divisive ads that nearly lost the referendum. His own monetary backers poured scorn on him when, apparently drunk, he instantly conceded Brexit as lost on the night of the vote when polls closed. And I do recall that. When you had the Brexit vote, and when it appeared perhaps that Brexit was going to go down to defeat, you had this supposed leader, obviously promoted as a leader, Nigel Farage, conceding defeat. Now, Mensch mentions that Farage has a unique record of failure in British politics. Despite gerrymandering his party, UKIP, to make himself the leader without ever putting it to a vote, and thus guaranteeing himself plum seat selection, Farage has failed to be elected to the UK's parliament a record 8 times in a row. He's an alcoholic with rotten brown teeth and a figure of fun and contempt in Britain. Pro-Remain media like the BBC were forever inviting Farage to argue for Brexit because his voters dislike him so much. His well-funded UKIP party only ever did well at European elections. And yet last week we saw Farage and Trump, the fat U.S. equivalent, at rallies together as the unpleasant and obese Republican nominee tried to pin himself to Brexit. Why? She asked. Simple, because Steve Bannon has taken over Trump's Walter Mondale-style disaster of a campaign, not improving it one iota, although I will say, if you look at the polls, he obviously has closed the gap, even now leading some of the polls. But anyway, and Steve Bannon has been running Farage from abroad as his puppet for quite a while. She goes on to point out, Breitbart flew Farage to CPAC and helped him get an able chief of staff, Rahim Kassam, a talented journalist at the Breitbart site. He, being Farage, was on Bannon's radio show, again, the one that he gave himself after becoming chair of the Breitbart.com site. He was on Bannon's radio show as far back as 2014. I guess I'll skip over this part. Well, basically, you have Breitbart London denying, saying that they were not established to support any political party. Nevertheless, it didn't take long for Breitbart London to become a UKIP cheerleader. Minch asking, does this sound familiar? Bannon forced and embarrassed Breitbart London into becoming Farage shills, causing staff fallouts, and then the head of the site left to run Farage's flop of a campaign. This is the exact progression of Breitbart America and Trump, even including useless Valkyrie Harridan, Laura Ingraham, and Trump supporting Jeff Sessions of Alabama. It's the exact same playbook with the exact same people, or at least the exact same person, when, of course, it comes to Steve Bannon. Breitbart staff, this being Breitbart London, were alarmed at the lack of editorial independence. We effectively became the UKIP comms office, says one employee. Any criticism of the sainted Farage was completely banned, says another. It's understood that Dellingpole and Kassam fell out over the site's pro-UKIP line at some point. It's not exactly clear when Kassam started working directly for Farage. And again, this does mirror what's happened with Breitbart here in the United States, where you had Breitbart staff alleging that perhaps Donald Trump had made a monetary payment to Breitbart. And looking at things now, I don't necessarily believe that's the case. I just believe Steve Bannon and Donald Trump were kindred spirits. But it has been alleged that there was, if anything, negative or critical of Donald Trump was going to be written. For the most part, it wasn't, but it certainly needed to be approved by Steve Bannon. And basically, it was propping up Donald Trump at the expense of other candidates. And she asked, in the Republican staffers quitting over Trump, tiny and insignificant, though UKIP was under Nigel Farage, the Steve Bannon playbook got the exact same results. It talks about how Nigel Farage's own party got fed up with what they called the Tea Party tendency and Farage's mad love affair with the American right. In February, Farage annoyed his followers by missing the first day of UKIP's spring conference in Margate because he was giving a speech to a half-empty room at the CPAC conference in Washington. The party was seething and baffled, says one insider. It was a major moment for UKIP, and the leader wasn't there. Now, Mensch says, and what about Trump's outrageous statements on Muslims and people of color? The Spectator's piece, read in retrospect and applied to the USA, seems to indicate that they actually are not Trump's own words and views, but merely those of Bannon. Bannon got Nigel Farage to say shocking things, to grab news cycles, the same way the longtime Democrat and employer and marrier of immigrants, Donald Trump, also did. Bannon writes the incredibly unsuccessful anti-immigrant, anti-Muslim, anti-free trade, and anti-Semitic playbook using Goldman Sachs as a modern euphemism for Jewish money even though Steve Bannon himself, of course, is a former Goldman Sachs banker. There were growing concerns about a change in UKIP's message. Farage is said to have developed a shock and awe strategy, which involved making deliberately outrageous statements to arouse the ire of the despised political and media class. For instance, in a television debate, Farage suggested that the NHS should not treat foreigners with AIDS. That prompted fury from politically correct commentators, as expected, but it also disturbed quite a few natural conservatives. Shock and awful, said a senior UKIP source. In an interview with Trevor Phillips, Farage also referred to a fifth column of Muslims in the country, which led to rumors that rather than running an election campaign, he was aiming for a well-paid gig on Fox News. And you have rumors today, I might add, that rather than running an election campaign, Donald Trump is aiming to try to start his own media outlet, which, again, apparently he and his son, I believe either Donald Jr. or Eric, actually looked into buying or starting a media outlet, I believe just a couple months back. In February of 2014, Steve Bannon made clear to the New York Times what Breitbart London was denying. The sole purpose of starting Breitbart London was to push Farage and UKIP to spread Bannon's nasty world order. Perhaps the most important thing in the Trump-Farage-Bannon playbook is two really stupid men who will say just what Bannon wants them to, how and when he wants them to. And again, I'm running short on time here. She said, in London, Breitbart News Network hopes to support a nascent European Tea Party before parliamentary elections in May. Isn't it odd, by the way, that these supposed strength nationalists can't seem to keep out of other countries' affairs? I mean, does anybody else find that a little bit odd, a little bit hypocritical, if you will? Farage is a guy, in the remaining time, again, I want to point out, Farage is a guy, like Trump, who has been very complimentary of Vladimir Putin. And there are several headlines and links here that she references. Trump and Putin, a love story from The New Yorker. Is Trump Putin's puppet from Newsweek? Trump is already helping Putin consolidate control of Ukraine from Politico. Vladimir Putin has a plan for destroying the West. But also Nigel Farage on Brexit, saying that Putin behaved in a more statesman-like manner. Nigel Farage from The Guardian saying, I admire Vladimir Putin. Again, Farage saying Putin behaved more like a statesman than Obama. Farage saying Putin is a leader that I admire most. Breitbart has said that Vladimir Putin supports Texas secession movement, and Vladimir Putin says Donald Trump is talented. Along with Trump, always felt fine about Putin. U.S. does plenty of killing also. So Breitbart, with some of their headlines under Steve Bannon, some of their stories, has become very, very pro-Russia. And of course, you got Nigel Farage, very, very pro-Russia. You've got Donald Trump, who seems to be very, very pro-Russia. You know, I'm coming to the conclusion personally now that Donald Trump, the man who supposedly could not be controlled by anybody, has been controlled, has been coached, has been told what positions to take, what to say. Bannon has bragged and has not been shy in telling people that he's been in constant contact with Donald Trump even before he joined his campaign. And so I think that we have Donald Trump just basically being a puppet of somebody else, in this case perhaps Steve Bannon. But, you know, this is not a guy who obviously, as far as I'm concerned, is fit. Is fit to serve as president, is fit to lead. This is a guy, again, to me, the connections to Putin and to Russia are terribly concerning, just as the connections with Huma Abedin and the Muslim Brotherhood and her connection, of course, to Hillary Clinton is terribly concerning. Both of these campaigns are unfit, as far as I'm concerned. You have the corruption of Hillary Clinton, and again, with the Muslim Brotherhood influence, you have the incompetence of Donald Trump with the Russian and the Steve Bannon and the alt-right influence. So, again, everybody, vote your conscience. You know, if you feel the need to vote for Donald Trump to stop Hillary Clinton, that's your business. However you want to vote, that's your right as an American citizen. But there's a lot of things to be concerned about here. There's a lot of things to keep in mind. There's a lot of things to do your own research on before you do go into those polls in November. I'm Jason Hawes. Like I said, I will be planning to do a show tomorrow at 4:30, probably biblically based, but we'll see what I come up with. Everybody have a great rest of your day. Take care and God bless. You've been listening to American Faith.